Well, you heard the latest in the news about State Senator Nicole Mitchell on trial. I've had a little bit of time today to listen to her testimony, and my goodness, you know, what a mess. Welcome to Drive Time. It's Jason. Dan Cook is off again today. Josh Wheeler is with us. I'm struck listening to this trial that, first of all, you know, quite a bit of what State Senator Nicole Mitchell is saying as to what she was doing in her stepmother's house, to me, feels like nonsense. It is very difficult to get your arms around the facts of this. Where on body cam video, she's saying she was in her stepmother's house to take some stuff from her late father. And then, not long ago, she says, no, I wasn't going to take anything. Susie's back in here.
Real briefly, Nicole Mitchell now is being cross-examined by prosecutors.
So this is some of the, so finally, after being on the stand all day, she started just before 10 this morning, about 5 hours. Well, you take out a lunch break, about 3.5 hours of testimony. But now the tough questions.
The
right?
Tough questions.
All right.
Talking right now about a letter that was found, a piece of paper that was found inside her backpack.
Okay.
Really getting picked apart by
We can actually dip into a little of this if you'd like, Josh, if you want to fire up my computer. I have the live feed from the court, and it's a delayed feed.
Additional confusion, and I think that's enough.
So why say it?
So, you know, this is something I've had to anguish over for the last year.
This is the fundamental question. Why did she say in the body cam video that
she would? I created this entire situation. So the only person I have to blame for this is myself. And I'm not saying this for sympathy, but I was very stressed out. And then at a certain point, you know, I'd never had a gun pointed at me before. Or anything. I didn't understand what Carol had said to the police, and I didn't have the context they had, and you know, I thought we were just going to calm everything down, and it went a different direction.
All right, so this
when
is
Carol initially chased me.
We could lower this down a little bit, Josh. This is Senator Nicole Mitchell on cross-examination right now, saying that what she said in the police body camera video in the moment that she was there to take some of her late father's stuff. Now she's trying to put that toothpaste back in the tube and say, like, no, I was just trying to diffuse it and figure, like, hey, this is a family matter. It would all go away. Today, she's saying that she had no intention of taking anything, that she was there, and she used the term welfare check, which is sort of a term that you hear from police when you're checking on a loved one. I have all of the feelings on this issue, right, that her personal story is really sad and gripping, and I'm so empathetic for any family and anyone who is working through a family member who is dealing with dementia or Alzheimer's. And it's even harder when you have strife in the relationship. And Senator Mitchell testified today about the fact that her stepmother wanted to kind of have a funeral with the ashes of Nicole Mitchell's dad. And she wasn't going to be able to go because she would be at the Capitol. And your heart sort of breaks for that, and you think, like, oh, my gosh, like, there's got to be a way to work this out. I guess I'm left with the fact that this is, and yes, it's a felony, and yes, it has a maximum charge of 20 years, but let's cut the crap for a minute and be real. This is small potatoes. Mm. This is a very minor criminal offense. And she could have made the whole thing go away. I am convinced of this. If she would have stepped down, taken responsibility, said I shouldn't have done this, I was out of my mind, and I was wrong. And would there have been a court case? I would be on this radio station right now urging the prosecutors to use discretion and let this go. Because society is not served by sending Nicole Mitchell to jail or to prison or convicting her of a felony for this. She's of no danger to society. She has had her personal tragedy bared for all of us. I think the best outcome of this would have been for it to go away. But the reason it isn't going away is because she refused to accept responsibility. And even today in court, to be saying, well, I didn't take anything, I didn't have anything, it just defies any sort of reasonable credibility. And frankly, man, it sucks if it's true, right? Because maybe it is true. And also, this never had to happen. It never had to happen. So many crazy decisions made in the middle of the night. Play, Josh, we pulled a little soundbite of Senator Mitchell. And you're welcome to chime in if you've been following this. My belief is that we are not served by locking up Nicole Mitchell. Frankly, we're not served by having a felony on her record. And also, she made this happen. She made this go to court. She made this drag on for more than a year. 651-461-9226. Here is her attorney asking, all right, did you steal anything? Did you intend to steal anything? Because to me, the biggest question, like, yes, she clearly broke in. She admitted on the stand trespassing. But that's not the charge. The charge is burglary. The charge is having kind of the tools of burglary, meaning a crowbar. To me, it's pretty weak. Weak sauce. Because it was caught in progress. And so what did she really have? Here is her attorney asking, again, a senator who could have made all of this go away. All of it. And yeah, is it hard to confess and is it hard to give up your seat in the Senate? Yes. Is it unfortunate? You made the choice. You made the choice to get in that car. Drive 200 miles, drive 3 miles, 3 hours up to Detroit Lakes in the middle of the night. You made the choice. Sometimes in life, we make one choice that's really bad. You got to pay. I don't think she should pay with jail time. I don't even think she should pay. Well, I don't think she should have paid with a conviction. Here's what she said when her attorney is like, well, did you take anything? Did you intend to take something?
Did you take anything from Carol Mitchell's house that night?
No.
Did you take anything of your father's that night?
No.
Did you take anything of Carol Mitchell's that night?
No.
Did you go into Carol Mitchell's house looking for any of your dad's possessions or mementos?
No.
Did you go into the house looking for anything of your father's or of Carol Mitchell's specifically?
No.
And if you wanted to take anything of your father's or Carol Mitchell's, could you have?
I wouldn't take something. But
if you wanted to?
Yes, I...
Explain why that is.
Because Dad's, like, area was in the basement.
I mean, 0% believable to me. Mm-hmm. If she would have testified and said... Yeah, like for a year. And she said she's been asking her stepmother for like her late father's like for some clothing to give to her kids. If she would have said, yep, I was there to get the photo album and some clothing. And I don't know what I was thinking. I was out of my mind with grief. And I'm sorry. Well, now a jury has to sort of figure it out. Text coming in. Unbelievable text coming. Unbelievable. I can't wait to share the way some of you guys are interpreting what I just said. And we'll do that. I'll give you a hint. You're a bleeding heart liberal. Let the criminals run free. To which I would respond this in just a minute on Drive. All right, Nicole Mitchell, the state senator, is on the stand telling her story. I find what I've heard hard to believe. Cross-examination. I had said before that cross-examination was underway. It was not. That was still her defense attorney asking her. The cross is underway soon. Court is in a bit of a break. We'll see at 3:25 if they actually want to do cross-examination today or if they'll do it tomorrow. I would think if I were the prosecution, I would want to do the cross-exam today. My assertion is that it does not serve society to have her locked up. And this is her fault for going down this road and having a court case. We would not have a court case, in my view, and in the view of most legal analysts that we have talked with on this show, if she would have accepted responsibility and resigned her seat in the state Senate, which is what I have said all along. Whether she was found guilty of this or not, to me, has no bearing on whether or not she should continue to be a state senator. She should not. She should have stepped down. She still should step down. Texters say that I am a crazy liberal. You're a bleeding heart liberal. Let the criminals run free, says one texter. Another texter. Oh, my gosh. Seriously, you're defending her? Is it because she's a Democrat? She broke into someone else's home and watched them sleep. This lady is a lunatic and needs to be put in jail. Why? Because she broke the law. I will say that this is a very strong opinion that people have when the person accused of the crime is not of the same political belief as that. I don't know. Were you guys saying this when Donald Trump was accused of concealing and hiding top secret documents from the FBI? I don't know. Interesting. There are times that judges and prosecutors make decisions out of discretion, out of humanity. Do you feel unsafe because Nicole Mitchell is out on the street? Like, give me a break. Give me a break. Jason, Nicole Mitchell should be tried and convicted of burglary and face the exact same consequences of every other first-time convicted burglar, assuming she's found guilty, no better and no worse. Don't cut her slack because she's a Dem. What is wrong with you people? Like, what is this? I am having some empathy here because when you have death and tragedy in the family and you have drama and you have a family member that you're concerned about their ability to care for themselves because they're in the early phases of Alzheimer's. I don't know, man. People make bad choices. I'm saying she should suffer consequences. I also push back on this idiotic belief in our society that the only acceptable consequence for someone is lock them up. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. Mark on YouTube. It's okay if your kids, when you get old, would you be okay if your kids broke in at 4 a.m. to get stuff? What is wrong with you guys? The only consequence that's acceptable is lock them up, get a conviction on your record. What does that solve? What does that accomplish? Does it give you the ability to just dismiss a situation and say, I'm done with it? Look, if you're out there with guns endangering our community, if you're a fraudster ripping people off, hell yes, throw the book at you, lock you up. But if you're in the middle of a family tragedy and you accept responsibility, step down from your elected seat, that's consequences. That's justice. That's enough. She didn't. She's in court. She did this to herself. I'm not saying the jury should not convict her. At this point, the jury should convict her. My sadness is that it got this far. It is sad that her personal mess is now a public conversation point. Didn't have to happen. Didn't have to happen. Is there a bigger picture about politicians and hubris and the lack of ability to just throw in the towel? I think so. But I don't know. This is more of a human issue to me. That it's hard when you're going through a tragedy. You knew you did something wrong, but you don't think you did something as wrong as what the narrative is, that you say, I want to clear my name. She's making it worse so far, in my view. Let's break. It's 3:30. In just a minute, we're going to talk about Minnesota's fraud problem. My goodness, it never stops. And my question is, why? Why do we have such a problem? And what are we going to do about it? Because just catching it and busting people, I don't know. I don't feel satisfied with that. Do you? We're going to talk with a Republican state representative who heads a House committee to fight fraud in this state. Christian Robbins joins us next on CCO. New challenge for the state of Minnesota. Can we go 1 week without a new headline about a massive scheme to defraud our state and our taxpayers? That would be nice. We reported all yesterday about the 8 locations all throughout the metro area where the U.S. attorney and federal agents were out raiding as part of the Fed's quote was massive scheme to defraud Minnesota's Housing Stabilization Services program. When I hear all of this, obviously I want the people who are defrauding us to be punished. But I'm really interested in how do we prevent this on the front end? We're pretty good at catching fraudsters. Now, what if we didn't have so much fraud? That would be nice. A state representative, Christian Robbins, is a Republican. She has been really out in front on this effort to try to fraud-proof as much as you can our state. And she joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Representative Robbins, good to talk you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So why do you think this is? Why has there been kind of story after story about fraud here in Minnesota?
You know, I think because we're shining a spotlight on it, and as we learn more about different fraud cases and we work with our federal partners and the public becomes more aware of it, it's just been snowballing. And I do think Feeding Our Future opened our eyes to a lot of fraud in a lot of other areas. And so I think we're really at the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I mean, that's My hope and my fear, right? Like part of the
exactly. The
fact that we've maybe gotten over this idea that we're somehow special and we're not scammers like, you know, those dirty Chicago politicians or those scammers in New York or whatever. We've seen that we've got a problem. The acting U.S. attorney said Minnesota has a fraud problem and not a small one. So is it? I mean, what do we do about it? Do we need to fund like more auditors on the front end? Do we need to slow things down on the front end? Is there a cultural issue in our state agencies where we're too trusting? Where are you at on all of this?
So I think it's all of the above. So first of all, we do need to change the culture of fraud. And part of that is holding agencies accountable. No one has been fired for any of the fraud we have seen in any of the agencies. And that's unacceptable. The public wants accountability from state government, and we are not getting it currently. Secondly, I think we need to do more to make sure internal controls are being followed. The basic processes that if a private company didn't follow grant closeout procedures or check billing practices or what have you, they would be in serious trouble. And so we can't. In order to catch it on the front end, we have to see what programs are having enormous increases in eligibility. What what programs are having enormous increases in the number of providers. Those are red flags, and apparently they've been missed. So, I mean, the fact that 22 of these housing providers are in the same building.
Same building.
And that didn't set off any alarm bells at DHS.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, so we need to really hold agencies accountable. We need to tighten these internal controls. Things have been flagged and nobody's caught them.
State Senator Kristen Robbins is with us. She is a Republican, heads up the House committee that is looking at fraud and looking at ways that we can prevent fraud and have better oversight. I mean, you mentioned the 22 providers in the same office building. I don't know. It seems to me, and maybe the way that we have these applications coming in, we could be doing this in a better way where you have somebody in charge of a specific grant, so that might get noticed, or you set up, are there AI or technological ways that we can have this better? I sure would think so. But even beyond that, I mean, some of this to me where you say with this housing program, the estimate for it when it was created, we're the first state to do it. Of course, we're the first state, which sometimes I'm like, do we have to be the first? Let's let somebody else start giving away money first. But OK, we're the first state to do it. The estimate it was going to be $2.6 million a year. And then when you're paying out more than $100 million, how does somebody at about, I don't know, $25, $30, $40 million say like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Exactly. No. So the signs are there, and it's true in these other areas. So what we found is there's a business model of fraud, and that a lot of the fraud is concentrated in these areas where Medicaid has expanded beyond the traditional healthcare services. And that those program areas are where we're seeing a lot of the fraud. And so, as you said, this ticked up since 2020 from 2.6 million to over 100 million. In the autism centers, we were again one of the first, started in 2017, 1.2 million, and it went to 228 million last year.
Yeah.
It's the same pattern, and we have got to start recognizing it, and we've got to intervene early.
Care 11 did a story on one of these providers in May. And it was A.J. Legault, their investigative reporter. I want to play just a little clip of that right now.
Computers, documents, boxes of evidence seized, including more than $100,000 in cash. The now unsealed search warrant details an investigation into a massive scheme to defraud the Housing Stabilization Services Program by taking advantage of the housing and drug addiction crises. It cites that exposed companies like Brilliant Minds billing Medicaid for services clients say they never received.
100% scam.
Among the companies targeted were Pristine Health, that billed thousands of dollars claiming to help Ben and Haley Gutowski find housing, but never even met with them in person, leaving their family homeless.
They just billed us for nothing.
I mean, and that was in May, and obviously it takes a little time for the feds to get the case together. So here they are serving search warrants on that this week.
Right.
But you look at this and think, all right, your point, I think, is excellent, that we're looking at, you know, the fraudsters know what they're doing. These are programs where for sure there is a need, right? There is a need for autism services. There is a need to help the elderly and people with disabilities find and maintain housing. And for sure, like, there's a big need. There probably is $100 million worth of need in this area. So being able to catch it and being able to flag it in a way, I understand it's tricky. It's not as easy as me saying, like, well, come on, like, why can't you figure this out? But, like, I don't know, Care 11 figured it out. Is it that tricky, Kristen?
Well, I'm not sure it is, especially inside the agencies where they have access to the data. So I can't look at the SWIFT payment system in the state and say, oh, look, their payments have spiked to this group or that group. But they can look at that, and they should be doing random samples of billing practices, like 10% of these different programs, and just checking, is somebody an outlier? Is there an enormous uptick in enrollees here? And so we have the tools. They have the data, and they just have to do a better job. And we have to have accountability, because to date, for these hundreds of millions of dollars of fraud, Nobody has been fired. Nobody's been held accountable. And so that allows it to continue.
Well, in fact,
we're not tolerating it, it's going to keep going.
They sort of, I mean, I get a little frustrated because to a certain degree, these departments are trying to take a victory lap and saying, like, well, we're the ones that told the Fed. And that's sort of the reaction that the Minnesota Housing, the Department of Human Services, which oversees this program, they're like, well, it was our auditors who called them. Well, no crap. Like, yeah, eventually you called them. But, I mean, I'm not going to give you a prize for discovering that your house was on fire when it's been on fire for 3 years.
Exactly. And I do want to give credit. I think they have a new head of the Office of Inspector General who testified in our committee last week. And he comes over from the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit from the Attorney General's office. And so I do think having him in place
that
is
helps.
Helpful.
Huh.
But that doesn't mean that, as you said, for the previous 3 years in this program or the previous, you know, since 2017, you know, 9 years in the autism centers, they still had an Office of Inspector General. They still had a commissioner. The current commissioner was the former head of compliance. Like, they keep kind of moving people around on the deck chairs to different jobs. The former inspector general who would have overseen this, she still works at the department. She just got moved to the general counsel's office.
Should we realign the role of the state auditor? I think often people are asking, where's the state auditor in this?
Yeah.
And my understanding is that the state auditor's charge is more about, you know, looking at other local units of government and being a resource there. I don't know that this is really the purview of the state auditor, but it feels like it could be.
I think it could be, and it's something we should look at. I think the bill we had this session to create an Office of Inspector General to oversee the entire executive branch is probably the best interim step.
Yeah.
Because I really think that's what most other states have. And if that office had teeth, they would really be able to, you know, subpoena these records, fire people, stop payments, catch things on the front end. And the problem is we as the legislator, whether it's our committee or the Office of the Legislative Auditor, who has been doing audits and pointing out these same internal controls problems for decades, because we're all the legislative branch, we can't force the executive branch because of separation
that.
Of powers to make decisions. So embedding an OIG to look at everything in the executive branch is the way to go. And it passed the Senate 60-7. The Democrat-controlled Senate passed this bill with huge bipartisan margins, and it failed in the House. So we've got to get that over the finish line next session.
Kristen Robbins, appreciate your time. Republican head of the Fraud Prevention and State Agency Oversight Policy Committee. Thanks for joining us today, Kristen.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Maple Grove, yes, and Kristen's a representative of Maple Grove, as I am as well. Parade tonight.
I'll be there.
Yeah, see,
okay,
I know it's right up the street from my house, so I'll be there too. Kristen Robbins with us here on CCO. 3:50, back in a minute. The rematch, Scott Jensen and Tim Walz. Is that what you guys want? I don't. It's not what I'm interested in. We'll talk about it though. Coming up at 4:05 after local news. Plus, we are giving away Paul McCartney tickets today. We'll play Name That Tune for your chance to win a pair of passes before you can buy them. Paul McCartney at U.S. Bank Stadium on October 17th. Every winner so far has been awesome. So I do not want... Last night it was Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Will it be
Michelle,
you?
Yeah.
Will it be you today? PaulMcCartneyGotBack.com. Want you to stick around, too. At 4:30, we're talking to the brand new CEO of Children's Minnesota Hospital. First woman to be the CEO in 100 years.